Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hey there. Welcome to episode number 150 of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh. Thank you for hanging out with me today, listening to the pod. I've got a really good topic for you guys today that I'm pretty excited to dig into. I feel like these are some things that we talk about pretty frequently. I get questions about this pretty frequently in very different ways. So I wanted to do a deep dive and really get into the particulars of what all of this stuff means and how it goes together. So maybe you guys can apply it to your personal situations a little bit easier, right? Because all of this learning, self-help, personal development, life change stuff only works if you can take the concepts, really understand the concepts, and apply them to you and your life in a way that makes sense. We're going to talk about the difference between sobriety and recovery. Obviously, on some level, those things go together, right? For me, as an alcoholic, I couldn't even start recovering until I got sober. You know, I had to have a clear mind to be able to see things clearly, but also I had to have the energy and fortitude, and I had to develop the persistence, resiliency, all those things to be able to recover. So sobriety, you know, being clean and sober means I'm no longer using drugs, drinking alcohol. And that's a little bit different for everybody, right? I never used drugs. I was a little afraid of drugs. So that wasn't necessarily a part of my story. I mean, I smoked pot some when I was young. It was never really my thing. It was never something I loved. And a lot of times it made me sick. You know, like I was just a good old-fashioned drunk. I would rather drink than do anything else. Nothing else really fascinated me. But other people are exactly the opposite, right? I know plenty of people who were predominantly drugs and alcohol didn't interest them. So clean and sober just means we're not using the substances anymore. And I did a video, I think it's on my Instagram on IGTV, or maybe it hasn't posted yet. I don't know, you guys. I can't keep track of everything everywhere anymore. But I have a video coming out, or maybe it's already out, who knows, about smoking pot, because I get this question a lot. Can you smoke pot and still call yourself sober? And the one thing, you guys know I am all about personal responsibility. So the one thing I want to say about this is people's definition for themselves is theirs for themselves. I am not here to judge anyone on how they do it, what they do, what they consider sober. There are some people that have separate dates. You know, I haven't done drugs since this date, and I've been alcohol-free since this date. Listen, this is such a personal thing, and I don't care how you do it, right? I want you to do it however you're comfortable doing it. I want you to be in a consistent forward motion, consistently healing, getting better, doing better, feeling better. But I can't get into all those details for every person, and I am not judge and jury of all that stuff, right? There are a lot of states now where pot is legal, so people think that it's perfectly fine to smoke pot and call themselves sober. I guess you could really technically say the same thing with cigarettes, right? I mean, it's an addictive substance too. So is caffeine. So I don't know how much you want to get down in the nitty gritty. I have to know what is the right thing for me. And that's where I want you to focus. What is the right thing for you? It is not your job or your place to decide for anybody else, right? So I want you to just be with you where you are. For me, I am an abstinence-based person. Abstinence means I abstain from that which I can't do well, right? Which is alcohol or really any substance. Like, you guys, I promise you, there's nothing. I'm so grateful I never did drugs because I'm so compulsive and out of control. Like, if I would have started doing drugs, I probably would have died the same day. Like, I probably would have done it and just kept doing it until I died. That would have been my whole drug story because I just don't have any self-control, right? I am super compulsive, and that's the nature of addiction. I don't have a ton of control in a lot of other stuff either, and that's just who I am. So I abstain from substances, period. Now, that is for me. I am not going to smoke pot. I don't want to smoke pot. I actually take a lot of pride in not using anything. I like to constantly challenge myself to get mentally stronger, to be able to cope with things better, to not get so down, to not get so up, right? Like, I take a lot of pride in having a clear mind and being able to cope with things appropriately without any substances, right? That doesn't make it wrong if somebody else thinks it's fine to smoke pot. I don't care what anybody does as long as it's not me. Okay, that's the bottom line. As long as I am not smoking pot, I don't care what happens with pot. I don't care what pot does around the world. That's pot's business. As long as it is not in me, I'm good. Same thing with alcohol. You know, I used to really struggle. I would have all these friends, of course, and you guys know this, if you've been sober any period of time for sure, you know, like, people will reach out to you, your friends, when they're struggling and going through things, they'll reach out to you. Oh my gosh, I need some help. Could you please help me? And what would happen, what kept happening, is then they would decide to drink again. And I assume they would feel embarrassed, or I don't know exactly. I assume embarrassed. They would feel embarrassed they were drinking again, and they would like stop being my friend. So I had all these people, they would just stop calling me. So I had to start telling people, like, yes, absolutely, I will help you. I'm happy to help you. I'll go to a meeting with you, whatever you need. But if you decide to drink again, you have to still be my friend because I'm not losing a bunch of friends over drinking or not drinking. I don't care if anybody else drinks. As long as I don't drink, that's where my concern is. So I say all of that again to say, I don't want us all to be in this judgment thing, right? Being judgmental and being consumed with what other people are doing is its own sickness, right? This is one of the things that makes any group of people challenging, certainly recovery groups. But listen, I would say the same thing about church. You get a bunch of people at church and the gossipy and judgmental. I see this in neighborhoods with families, especially affluent neighborhoods. You know, parents reach out to me about their kids and what their kids are doing, but they're so consumed with what everybody else will think, you know, or they're talking about the neighbor down the street's kid who did this and did that. I'm like, just mind your own business. Mind your own business. Don't worry about what other people are doing. If we can all be a little more self-focused and less consumed with other people and their activities and talking about it and judging them, then we would all not feel so judged, right? You get afraid to go into groups and your anxiety gets high because that's your fear of being judged. But you only fear being judged if you are also judging. That's why that fear exists in you. And when I finally figured that out, I mean, that was a game changer for me. I was so judgmental. I had something crappy to say about every situation, every type of person. This person does that, and that means they're this. I mean, I was so gross because I grew up like that. And people are pretty judgmental, and I didn't realize that until I started to change that in myself, and then you hear it so much in other people. But we're not here to judge, right? Just stay focused on yourself and what you're doing and what feels right for you and what's comfortable for you, and leave everybody else alone. There's my tangent for the day. Well, it probably won't be the only one, but maybe it's just the first one today. Okay, so let's dive into this, the difference in sobriety and recovery. Again, sobriety is just the stopping the substance. And you hear a lot of talk also in this first year of recovery, right? Like in 12 steps, we say don't make any big changes in your first year. It's not because we have some overwhelming desire to control you and your life. It's because in your first year, you want your focus to be on one thing. You want your focus and energy to go into not drinking, period. And we're talking big changes, right? Changes that are life disrupting. I'm not talking about changing your toothpaste, right? I'm talking about getting married or getting divorced. Moving can be pretty disruptive. Now, some of that stuff is not avoidable, right? Like sometimes maybe you got a new job offer or your spouse got a job offer and you're relocating and you happen to get sober in the midst of that, right? Obviously, that relocation is going to take place, but we need to make sure that you have things in place to keep you on track, to make sure you're protected and you're protecting your sobriety, right? It's those kind of things, big life-changing things, new jobs, new cars, right? Anything big spending of any sort. Those aren't necessarily things that you need to do in your first year. Number one, because again, you want to stay focused on one thing. Your sole focus should be on just not drinking and getting really comfortable with that. The other part of that is you don't want things and activities that are going to cause you to have high highs or low lows. You want to try to stay even because high highs and low lows are going to knock you off balance, and those are going to be triggering events. And that's going to cause more feelings, high anxiety, sadness, uncertainty, and all those things are what we drink over. That's why we say, don't make any major life changes in your first year. Just get comfortable not drinking, right? Just get comfortable with the basics. Then you can start worrying about that other stuff. But when you're really protecting your sobriety, you don't want to disrupt it. You want to be pretty chill. And so anyway, that's why we say that. Now, when you get into the recovery part, and there's not necessarily any time frame on this. I would say somewhere several months in, there's a point that you hit where you get pretty comfortable with the not drinking part, right? With the sober part or not using, whatever. You get pretty good with that, right? You're in a good place of acceptance. You know you don't want it in your life. It's not doing you any favors. You're feeling really good without it. You've got a good routine in place. You're comfortable just with the sober part. After that is when the recovery stuff starts. Again, there's no specific timeline. Like, it's going to be different for everybody. It depends on how dedicated you are to your recovery routine. Like, how involved are you really? How much are you really doing? Obviously, that's going to get you there faster. And how much do you want it? And how mentally, how committed are you? Are you really in and thinking this is long-term and whatever? Are you still messing around with the, oh, maybe one day I can drink again. I think I'll just stop for a year and then I'll probably be able to do it. If you're telling yourself that, like, you're wasting all of our time. You know that's not true. You've tried it 1,000 times. Just move the F on, right? At some point, we've got to let all that ridiculousness go because you've tried to control it so many freaking times. It never works. It's not going to magically work in another year or after a 60-day break or 6 months or what. It's not going to work. You know it's not going to work. You've already tried. It doesn't work. If I'm trying to control something, it's because I've already lost control. That's just the truth. So if you're playing that game with yourself still, then you're nowhere near this recovery phase, right? You're still, I'm not sure where. You're before even sobriety, really. You're not even totally in the sobriety phase. But the recovery phase will come after that sober peace, right? After the sobriety of just getting a clear mind, a clear body. You know what my favorite phrase, I got to keep the signal clear. So sober sobriety is just getting the signal clear and getting comfortable with that. Then we start recovery. So this is where, you know, recovery is healing. And this is where I say everybody is recovering from something. Because recovery is just healing, and we're all healing from different things in life. Recovery and healing is not specific to addiction. You know, we're all recovering from various things on a daily basis. But if you look back to before your drinking, and we're going to get a little personal today. I'm going to give you some personal deets on myself. So I'm going to use my story to kind of break this down and explain this recovery peace and what it really means. So you have before drinking, and who were you before drinking and how you were. Now, my event that kind of threw me into the drinking life was a breakup. It was my first love. I was absolutely devastated when we broke up. I was 19 years old. And it's interesting to me that sometimes when we're older, for sure, we tend to downplay those teenage relationships, right? Like they're not as significant, you know, puppy love. We put all these terms on it. But I have to be honest with you, now at 48 years old, looking back, that was probably honestly the most pure I have ever loved someone. Because I was so open to it. I had never had heartbreak before. I didn't have any reservations. I wasn't weird. I didn't have fear, right? Like now I walk into a dating relationship with, you know, 200 years of baggage behind me. But in that first real love, like I was just completely 150% open to everything because I didn't know any better. And it was the most pure I have ever loved anyone, right? Which is without any drama. And it was beautiful. We had a great relationship. We didn't fight. We got along really, really well. So the breakup was very unexpected. And this is where my stubbornness came in too, because I was too stubborn to reunite. I'm sure nobody's surprised by that one. But let's look at, so that was my event that catapulted me into my drinking life. And let's look at the side effects of heartbreak, right? What happens when you're in that state of mind? We've all been through this. We've all been divorced or have had breakups. We've all gone through this stuff. You know how bad it feels. It is, oh, it's so much. It's horrible anxiety, right? Your anxiety goes through the roof. You just feel terrible. Your self-esteem takes a hit. You start to question your value and your worthiness. You start to question everything you did. Are you good enough? Did you do it right? I could have done this better. I should have done this. I should have said that. You feel some rejection, totally normal in any kind of breakup. You feel rejected. And then you're going through all the stages of grief too. You know, there are 5 stages of grief, and you go through all of that stuff when you're breaking up. It's its own mourning process. So when I had all of that going on, those feelings for me were so big, I couldn't cope with them. And that's when I started going out and I started doing a little bit of drinking. And when I started going out and doing a little bit of drinking, that's when I stopped maturing. And this is why, fast forward so many years, when it's time to get sober, we're super immature, right? Because you really do stop maturing. They say you stop maturing at whatever age you start using and drinking regularly because you stop developing coping skills. I'm no longer learning how to cope with my feelings and troubleshoot and get through my life. I'm just drinking to numb them. So again, fast forward, I got sober at 33 and a half. At 33 and a half, I literally was about 18 mentally and emotionally. So, because I never learned to cope with my feelings. I just numbed them. Now, mind you also, remember, when I started drinking way back then, I wasn't drinking crazy. I wasn't out of control. I wasn't blacking out. Some people start that way, but I didn't. Probably because I'm a pretty controlled person in general. So my drinking didn't get way crazy out of control till the end. I had many, many, many years of drinking that was out of control in a life sense, but not in the sense of blacking out, acting crazy, screaming, crying, drunk. I had those moments, but, you know, years and years apart, few and far between. So I stopped maturing, right? So I have all these big feelings. I have all these side effects of heartbreak. My self-esteem now is lower. My anxiety is higher. I'm questioning everything about myself. I have a sense of rejection going through the stages of grief. I have all of this going on. And instead of learning how to deal with any of that, I start drinking because it makes me feel better, right? So let's break down higher anxiety. What happens when you have high anxiety? You know, when you have persistent anxiety, it leads to fear and worry, right? That's what anxiety is. Fear and worry cause you to retreat from life and activities. When you get scared, you no longer want to be out really living your life and doing things. You start to settle. You start settling for smaller things or things that are not exactly what you want, but they're okay because you're too scared to go out and get what you really want. And you're scared of the rejection. You're scared of the judgment. You're scared of the failure. That's everything that comes with anxiety. So think about how much your life is affected if you're living with some persistent anxiety. Think about how many choices in your life are different because you're functioning from a place of fear and worry and anxiety. This also, you know, heartbreak especially, when you get your feelings hurt, we tend to blame the person that hurt our feelings instead of taking responsibility for our feelings. If you say something to me and it hurts my feelings, most people's reaction is to get mad. Oh, I can't believe you said that to me. When really, if you say something that hurts my feelings or causes me any kind of feeling, it's my feeling. That's my responsibility. There's nothing wrong with you because you pushed the button. It's my button, right? I got to figure out where's that button coming from. That's my button. It's my responsibility. Let me figure out why I have that button and what can I do to be better. So when we have these breakup situations and we feel that, we get that hurt feelings and our ego is bruised and we feel that sense of rejection, we can start to get angry at whoever we date, whoever you date, whether it's boys or girls. We can get angry at boys and girls because we're hurt and we don't know how to deal with it and we feel rejected. And the knee-jerk reaction again is to blame the person or situation or thing that hurt our feelings instead of taking responsibility for the damn feeling. So if you have anxiety and fear, are you really making great choices? Or are you editing your choices to accommodate your fear and anxiety? When you settle for something that's not exactly what you wanted, it's not quite right, it's not the exact fit, but it's good enough. When you settle, then you're disappointed. Then you're living a life that's not exactly how you thought it would be. And you don't feel good about that. And that creates that sense of loss and confusion. Like, what the heck has happened here? Like, what am I doing? These are the things we start to address in recovery, right? This is the stuff we start to learn in recovery. After we're sober, we have to get in that healing process. And these were the pieces for me that I had to heal over the course of a long time. Like, obviously, you don't do all of this stuff in a moment, right? You're not like, well, this week, I'm going to heal fear and anxiety. It doesn't work that way. This is a lifelong journey. And sometimes I get really good, and then sometimes I take some steps back and I have to refocus. This is a lifelong journey. So let's talk about the self-esteem part of that. just the heartbreak. We're still talking about the side effects of heartbreak, right? And this is where I was in my life. This was my journey. So when my self-esteem takes a hit, that also affects my dating choices. It affects the jobs I went for. It affected my finances and my spending habits. It affected who I was friends with and places I went. It affected the clothes I wore, my obsession with appearance. All of that revolved around my low self-esteem. And when you think about all those pieces, when I look back on my 20s and a good portion of my 30s, and I think about that self-esteem piece and how many pieces of my life were affected just by that, it's like, holy crap, that was everything. It was everything, and it was really hard. So in my recovery, I had to address that. I had to heal that self-esteem. And in some ways, it's not nearly as hard as you think. At the same time, as everything in recovery is, it's delayed gratification. And we're not good at that. We're typically instant. We're wired for instant gratification. So delayed gratification is challenging. When you're in recovery and you're healing yourself, you're playing the long game now. This isn't about, I need to feel better right this second. This is about, okay, I know I need to do X, Y, Z because for the long term, I want to be this person. So I need to care for myself. I need to make these kinds of choices for myself, and I need to take these kinds of actions for myself, regardless of how it feels in the moment. This is the long game. And that self-esteem also made me codependent and inferior. And I didn't stand up for myself. When you put all of those things together, right? Fear, worry, anxiety, low self-esteem. You put all of that together and you've got a person. I had no idea who I was because I would mold myself to match whoever I was hanging out with at the time, whatever friend group I had or whatever boy I was hanging out with, I would just be whatever they were to fit in. You know, like I had a good friend of mine, my very first friend when I moved to Los Angeles, James, who I love more than life. One of my favorite people. He's one of the greatest friends I've ever had. And I adore him. And he was my first friend when I moved to Los Angeles. I was super young. And everybody in LA goes hiking. We go hiking all the time. We hike the canyons, right? And this was something I had never done, obviously, because I'm from Kansas that is totally flat. There are no canyons to hike. But this is super popular out there. And I met James and he's like, oh yeah, let's take our dogs, go to the dog park, hike the canyon. I was like, oh yeah, I love doing that. And I went and that became a regular thing. Not because it's who I was, but because my new friend, that's what he did, and that's what he and his dog went to do. So I was like, oh yeah, I love doing that. And I went to do it. But you see what I'm saying? Not that it was bad. I loved doing it. I really did. I ended up loving doing it. But you see what I'm saying? How I would just mold myself to match whoever I was spending time with. I wasn't intentionally choosing what I wanted in my life and going out and doing those things. I wasn't saying like I'm a singer, right? I wasn't seeing that going, well, I love to sing and I sang all through high school and I did musicals and I love singing. It's such an important part of my life. And I still sing a little bit today, obviously not nearly as well because I haven't had any coaching or practice in a long time like I did back then. But it would have made more sense if I was in my life pursuing doing some kind of singing because that's what made me happy. But I didn't do that at all because I didn't have the confidence. I had too much anxiety about seeking out those activities and what it would be like and embarrassing myself and fear of failure and fear of judgment. So I would never seek out those things that actually were who I am because I had too much fear. This is what recovery is. It's fixing all of my broken parts sobriety was just stopping drinking. But I can't really get into recovery until I've got the sobriety. I have to have a clear signal to be able to get in tune with myself and see myself and love myself and heal myself. I got to have a clear signal. So recovery is challenging without the sobriety. Not that it's impossible. It's also not impossible to just quit drinking and never really heal your parts. I know plenty of people, this is in AA what we call a dry drunk, right? It's somebody who's dry, not drinking, but they're not doing any of the work to become a happier person. So they're still just angry, bitter, resentful. And this is what happens in the world, right? If I don't address my issues, if I don't address how I have let myself down and how I have settled and how I have lived in fear, if I don't address those things and heal those things, then I just end up bitter and resentful, blaming the world for my problems because I'm too scared to get off my buns and make the life that I want. That's how we get bitter and angry and resentful. Because we're not living in who we really are and we're not really taking action. We're just being fearful. It's okay to have fear, you guys. Fear is very helpful. Fear helps keep you safe and assess risk. That's why you have fear. What I didn't like in myself is when fear would hold me back. I wouldn't do things and pursue things that were true to my heart because I was so fearful of these outside things. See, when you heal your self-confidence, you don't have any interest in the outside things. I have zero interest in what somebody else thinks of me. I have zero interest if somebody is judging me, if somebody's watching me, if somebody's talking trash on me. I don't care. It doesn't affect me because I know who I am, because I have built me. I don't need validation from other people or outside things or sources. When you heal yourself, you get all of that from within. That's what recovery is. Slowing down, looking inward, and figuring out exactly who I am so I can create a life that makes me happy, that I can be proud of. It's healing. So I'll give you a quick rundown of like my first things. You guys have heard me say this on 1,000 episodes. The first thing I worked on in my recovery was my temper and not catastrophizing everything. My temper was so ridiculous. I was a mean little thing, but I would catastrophize everything. So as soon as something didn't go my way, I'd be throwing a temper tantrum and yelling and condescending, and I was mean. And I had to slow down and realize that every tiny thing wasn't the end of the world, and it didn't require me throwing a temper tantrum. Like, I had to have these moments of just getting over myself and realizing how ridiculous and immature I was behaving and how much my behavior resembled a toddler. That was a lot of my journey, too, is like catching myself in these situations and going, oh my gosh. I'm behaving like a 5-year-old. That's pretty impressive, especially in your 30s. That's a good look. So it is just slowing down. And that was the first thing I did. Work on my temper and just being quiet, right? Which ties into patience, which ties into, again, not catastrophizing things. Like when something would happen, I'd have to just chill out and go, okay, this happened. What does this really mean? Do I need to freak out and throw a fit, or do I need to just get in the solution? And this is where my solution thing comes in. I don't want to be stuck in the problem, you guys. Problems are not even interesting. There's a million of them. They come every single day. Who cares? Everybody's got problems. There's always going to be more. It's never going to stop. Yay. Let's get in the solution. Cool. Problems, great. How do we fix them? What can I do? What can I do to feel better? What can I do to be braver? What can I do to live in alignment with who I am and creating the life I want? And I knew for me, I did not any longer want to be the person with that hair trigger, freaking out at the drop of a hat, shredding somebody with my words, making them feel terrible with all that judgment and condescension. That was not the person I wanted to be. That's who I was when I was so scared to death of life and every person in life and what they could do to me could hurt me and how they could hurt my life. I had to step out of that fear and just own who I am and grow the fuck up. That's what I had to do. And that's what recovery is. No more hiding. It's just growing up. So that's where I started. And the next thing I did was anxiety, right? I knew I had to break down my anxiety because I knew it was holding me back in everything. I knew my anxiety and fear was holding me back from every single thing I ever wanted to do, from everything I ever dreamed of doing. And I knew it would continue to do that in my sobriety if I allowed it. So I had to jump on the computer and do some Google searching and figure out how to start breaking down anxiety. And this is a lot of stuff that we work on too in the 6-week program. But you have to figure that stuff out. And that was the beginning of my journey. It was my temper and not catastrophizing things, not throwing a temper tantrum. And then it was anxiety. And that kind of sounds like a lot, but it's really not, because it all goes together. You know, like once I made a commitment to work on my temper, the first thing I did with my temper is I just made myself shut up. So as soon as I would want to lash out at somebody and start being mean, I would make myself just be quiet. Just pause and be quiet. Shut your mouth for once in your damn life and think something through and think about how you want to respond instead of responding like a freaking lunatic and making everybody around you feel terrible and not want to be around you. Because that's not what I want. I don't want people to not want to be around me. I mean, that was horrible. So that's what I did. I hope this episode was helpful. It went a little longer than I expected, and I apologize for that. And I hope you got some good information. If you did love what we talked about in this episode, please take a minute and share it with somebody. Be of service to those around you. Do something kind for the people you love. Compliment a stranger. Whatever it is, be of service. How can you make somebody else's day better? Start there today. I love you guys. I hope you are having a fantastic day, and I'll see you next week.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast, candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.